Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Agreement reached to end the strike at Nabisco. Public sector unions in Missouri fighting the governor who's trying to turn workers into at-will employees. And today on the show, the latest from the American Legion and the Alliance for Retired Americans. Welcome to the Friday, September 17th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. Mr. Jeffrey Stouffer is going to be our first guest on the show. He's one of our regulars. He comes to us from the American Legion, where he handles media and communications, and will zero in on the October issue. One of the stories, this is pretty fascinating. I love their articles. This is titled, From Service to Harvest, Farming Can Be a Lifesaver for Veterans, Especially Those with Disabilities. And this article is about a program that's been around since 1990 called Agribility. And it offers services in 20 states for farmers, and it connects them with resources in their state. And they're targeting veterans, especially, like I said, ones with disabilities. And I like this quote here from one of the organizers. Veterans and farmers, they have a lot of similarities. Farmers don't quit when it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon. We're not afraid of hard work. We're not afraid of the mission. We'll do whatever it takes to get the mission done, and we want purpose in life. And there's various vets who have taken to farming, and they talk about this in the article on how it has improved their life, especially those suffering from a post-traumatic stress disorder. It's a tough job, but if you have a passion for it, it's the right place to be. The other story deals with what they call wind therapy. And essentially, there's an organization, this is a nonprofit, called the Motorcycle Relief Project. And this organization has helped hundreds of veterans, as well as first responders, blow off steam and reduce the weight of their experiences. Again, we're getting into post-traumatic stress disorder. And a lot of these, they get on motorcycles and they just go into the countryside and tear it up. They just go nuts, kind of let off all the frustrations in the wilderness. Great story. And lastly, we're going to talk about an interview, and this is all posted online. If you go to legion.org for complete updates, there's an interview that they did with the new VA secretary, and he talks about the changes that he has been making at the VA. And I'll tell you, they've needed a whole lot of changes over the years. And one of the things they need to do, and we talked about this with the American Federation of Government Employees just 2 days ago, is to hire more people. Right now, there's about 50,000 openings in the VA, and the process of getting hired is very, very cumbersome. So that's all posted online, and Jeff is going to get into all of that. Rich Fiesta will be joining us later in the show. He's one of our regulars. He comes to us from the Alliance for Retired Americans, retiredamericans.org. They have about 4 million plus members. And we're going to get into voting, primarily what's happened in Texas. The Texas Alliance has sued the state over their voting restriction law. And Rich reports that all of their members are united in the belief that we should make it easier for voters to cast a ballot, not harder. That would make sense, right? Well, the Texas law is the result of a deliberate effort to keep millions of Americans from having their voices heard at the ballot box. And Rich says it bluntly. It's an affront to democracy. And he's right. We're also going to get into a lower drug prices. Congress is working on ways to expand Medicare. And the Biden administration has unveiled a detailed blueprint for lowering prescription drug prices. And that includes allowing Medicare to directly negotiate lower drug prices and making those prices available to other insurance plans. That is the most ridiculous thing that has happened in this Congress. And this goes back to the Bush years. Because Bush, this is George W., made it possible for Medicare to expand and do Part D for drug coverage. But again, like I just said, they can't negotiate for lower prices. And they do that in the VA. You would think when you buy in bulk, you would get a lower price. No. And you could thank Big Pharma for that, because they did all the lobbying to make sure that there's no discounts available. So hopefully this administration will change all that. So Rich will be joining us later in the show. Got some good news here. After over a month on strike, the Bakery, Confectionery, Tobacco Workers, and Grain Millers International Union announced that they have reached a tentative contract with Nabisco Mondelez. In a statement from the international president, Anthony Sheldon, the union said negotiators reached a tentative agreement with the company on a new contract, and in the coming days, local union officers on the bargaining committee will present the tentative agreement to their respective memberships, who will then vote on the agreement. So it's not done, but at least it's moving in the right direction. Sheldon said he wanted to thank and commend all the members of the bargaining committee for their many, many hours of extremely hard work to reach this tentative agreement. As always, in our union, the members will have the final say on the contract. Well, the new agreement comes as workers faced increased violence on the picket line, and Nabisco faced a decrease in production. So the strike was pretty effective here, and it's been going on for more than a month. Listen to this. The Portland Mercury has reported that in the past few days, private security firm Huffmaster was brought in to secure the Portland facility. Instead, they became confrontational with the strikers, including pinning a member of Teamster Local 162, who was there to support the striking workers, to the side of a van while elbowing him for about 2 minutes. I hope they got some video on that. Last Wednesday, another protester said that a Huffmaster agent who had been stomping on protesters' feet elbowed them into a vehicle. This is what he said. I was not touching him. I wasn't touching anyone. I was just standing there with a sign. I actually was recovering from a foot injury, and after that, I've had a lot of difficulties walking this week. You've been on a picket line before. This is no surprise to you. Well, last week, the CEO of Nabisco, Dirk Vandeput, said at a banking conference that production of Nabisco products continues, but not at the same level as before the strike. He said their failure to deliver rate climbed to 7.1% since the strike began. Before the strike, it was 5.3%. The data shows that the majority of those unfilled workers, or unfilled orders, I should say, were caused by the company canceling shipments. So we'll see what happens here. Again, tentative agreement, and it's going to the rank and file. A little salute here to the Portland Thorns soccer team, represented by the National Women's Soccer League Players Association. Well, they took part in a special solidarity action on Tuesday at the Nabisco plant in Portland, Oregon, the plant I was just talking about. Emily Menges is a player and treasurer for the union, and she said, I've personally never been on a picket line before, but it's important to lend my voice and support other workers at this time. She went on to say, as members of a players' union, members of a sports team, and part of a group of women who know right from wrong, it's important to show up and stand in solidarity with other members of the community who are fighting for a lot of the same things we're fighting for. Good for them. Salute to the Portland Thorns soccer team. Missouri public employee unions are continuing to struggle against the governor's office for collective bargaining. Now, if we go back 3 years, 2018, the former governor, Eric Greitens, who resigned because of a sex scandal, signed a law that gave meager raises in exchange for changing the state's merit hiring system, effectively reclassifying state workers into at-will employees. Well, since then, the current governor, Mike Parson, who was Greeton's lieutenant governor, has allowed every single public sector union contract to expire. How about that? Well, last May, Cole County Circuit Judge John Beatum ruled that the merit law was unconstitutional and ordered the state to resume good faith bargaining with state unions and for state agencies to begin processing filed grievances that have not been answered during Parsons' term. Now, Governor Parsons' administration has filed an appeal contesting that decision, which is further delaying any union negotiations. The state employees are represented principally by AFSCME, CWA Local 6355, and SEIU Local 1. By the way, Missouri state employees remain some of the lowest paid state employees in the country. In the country. With non-competitive pay forcing agencies to shut down facilities and services. You know why? Staffing problems. They figure, why bother to work for such lousy wages? So it's hurting the public, which is paying their salaries, essentially. I'm hearing, too, that some lawmakers in Missouri are going to reintroduce right to work. Now, several years ago, I want to say it probably was maybe 3 years ago, the unions all got together and defeated that. So they're still trying, though. They're still trying. Let's go to Sacramento now. OSHA has received a complaint from the Sacramento Teachers Union Association accusing the district of mishandling a COVID-19 outbreak by prompting employees, including an unvaccinated teacher, to show up to work even when they had symptoms associated with COVID-19 or had been exposed to the virus at work. Additionally, the complaint alleges that after a number of custodians tested positive, the school operated with less janitorial staff and thus was not able to adequately keep the classroom sanitized. The union further stated that the district failed to properly implement contact tracing measures, such as when a teacher tested positive but was not contacted by the district about contact tracing whatsoever. Boy, they got some problems there. Wow. All right, we're going to have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to link up with Jeff Stouffer on behalf of the American Legion.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency, celebrating 50 years. You can find more at ulagency.org. Before we get to Jeff Stouffer from the American Legion magazine, I was thinking about this the other day. You know, we featured Marty Walsh, the Labor Secretary, on our Labor Day show a couple weeks back. And I was thinking, maybe we should start a segment like, where's Marty today? Because the guy spends very little time in Washington. He's all around the country. Yesterday, he was in Cincinnati meeting with immigrant workers and local labor leaders at the Cincinnati Interfaith Workers Center. Why? Well, he was discussing wage theft, which is a horrible thing going on in America. It's been going on for a long time. Wage theft and workplace safety violations. The discussion focused on the importance of workplace organizing as well as federal protections for workers. So that's where he was yesterday. I don't have his itinerary for today, but on Monday, and you might want to check the Labor Department on this, in an effort to help the nation's pandemic recovery, the Labor Department is launching its Essential Workers Protections Outreach and Education Initiative, and this is to protect frontline essential workers and ensure they know their workplace rights. This is going to happen Monday afternoon from 3 to 4. That's Eastern Standard Time. And they're going to carry it live on Facebook. Again, that's this coming Monday, September 20th. As part of the effort, the department's wage and hour division is collaborating with worker advocates, One Fair Wage, as well as their Service Workers United for Power group, and High Road Restaurants Initiative for this event. Again, it'll be on Facebook, to share information about restaurant workers' rights under the Fair Labor Standards Act. And a lot of restaurant workers, well, many of them are not working anymore because of the pandemic, but they have been getting screwed on wages and tips. And right now, if you work in a restaurant where you only get your tips, it's like $2.20 an hour. And if you don't get tips, you're screwed. So again, Marty Walsh taking the lead on this. Big changes happening in the Labor Department. All good for workers. All right, let's go to line number one. Welcome Jeff Stover on behalf of the American Legion magazine. We're going to touch on the October edition. But first, this is pretty big. An interview with the new VA secretary, and it is posted online, legion.org. We'll give you the exact location on that. But this is good stuff, no doubt about it. Jeffrey, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Great to be with you again, Flash. Thank you.
Now, talk to me about this interview. Well, first of all, that was probably not an easy thing to achieve, but maybe give me the specifics on that, how you lined it up, what he talked about, and the impact you see happening here.
You know, it was easier than you'd think. The new VA secretary, Dennis McDonough, was very happy to participate in our podcast. We had live podcasting from our national convention in Phoenix at the end of August. In the 1st of September, which 10 days in Phoenix, and I think it went under 100 degrees maybe one day. But we did pull off a national convention of the American Legion. About 7,000, 8,000 Legionnaires were there in Phoenix for our convention, which we know was derailed the previous year by COVID. But the secretary was one of our marquee speakers and was pretty happy to sit down with our podcast co-hosts and who are all Afghanistan veterans. So it was really meaningful, especially given that what was going on in Afghanistan at the time. So, he addressed three pretty key topics in that Q&A before he got up and he addressed our whole national convention. And those topics were one that I've been following very closely. I think I've talked about it on the show before, and that's the electronic health records issue, getting lifetime electronic health records sort of married up between DOD and VA so that a veteran doesn't have to, find, dig through lost, missing medical records to prove that they have a service-connected disability. The other one, another topic that they talked about was just the situation with COVID and VA's response to COVID and how and where they stood. And then the third thing, importantly, especially at the time, was the issue of, mental health and well-being for veterans of the war in Afghanistan.
So, Jeff, let's tear this apart a little bit. And the health records, I want to spend some time on that because I'll tell you, that's been a backlog for years now. And from what I'm reading, they're going to use the available technology, including mobile devices and apps, to kind of sift through this. Can you get into some detail on that?
Well, the big component of it is to drive all of this forward is to get an integrated DOD to VA transition, and that's the electronic health records, conversion that the American Legion has been fighting to see happen for literally decades. You know, the two departments do not communicate very well across the two, from active duty service to veteran status, and so the records either they don't transfer correctly or they don't transfer at all. But there is one of the speakers at our Veterans Affairs and Rehabilitation Commission meeting that were some of the speakers were from Cerner, who has the main contract on getting this accomplished. So they had an interesting presentation, but they mentioned that out of millions of physicians use the Cerner system for electronic health records processing, but they said that they have like 600 DOD clients, DOD healthcare clients, facilities signed up, but they have just one VA facility signed up at that point. Just this last week, there was an announcement that they're adding like three more. So the score at the national convention was 600-1 between DOD and VA who were bought in and actually had gone live with this electronic health record system. And, it's just going to make things so much better and easier. And the secretary talked a lot about My Healthy Vet, VA apps and web, using more mobile and computer technology to sort of manage your healthcare as a veteran, and I think that there will be an evolution in this, or that's what he spoke of going forward. But the big issue is it's been the elephant in the room for years is having one medical record that stays with you from the time you enlist throughout your life after discharge into VA, so that you don't have to worry about, if they talked about receiving their brown folder. One of the Cerner executives who was a veteran said she had received her medical records and they came on a floppy disk. And she said, I don't even know where you can run a floppy disk. It was really pretty funny. So the bottom line is that there is, I think that we are finally at the edge of a massive change in the way medical records are managed between DOD and VA.
The
secretary spoke of it.
Yeah, they definitely got to upgrade some of those computer systems. My gosh. Did he give any timetable on any of this happening, Jeff?
Well, the Cerner executives were saying that it was going to be within the next few months, and lo and behold, just the other day, I saw I was on a website and I saw that they had actually announced that I think three or four more VA facilities, I don't have them in front of me right now, are ready to go live with this. But Spokane, Washington is the first kind of pilot place where they started it. They were going to do it in Seattle and a couple of other places in the Pacific Northwest, but that all got sort of sidelined during COVID, mm-hmm. which was another topic that the VA secretary talked about on our podcast.
Okay, what did he say about that as far as getting the vaccine?
Yeah, it's the deal is that, that VA has, made a big, obviously when you're working in healthcare and working with veterans and working with a fairly older audience or older patient base, VA was pretty quick in July, I think, that they put down the mandate for all healthcare workers to be vaccinated. And I was just checking to see how they're doing on that. And so far they've got 88% of their employees are vaccinated, but that leaves about 46,000 who are not nationwide. And so the mandate has been, announced and re-announced. And the understanding is that everybody, whether you're a staff member, a clinician, volunteer, or anyone who interacts with veterans at the VA are going to be required to be vaccinated by October 8th, no later. And so, you know, VA at the honestly has done a pretty good job with COVID management from the very beginning, which was a big concern of ours for sure. And especially when you've got, you know, an older population. But, you know, I think VA is kind of uniquely equipped to handle those kinds of situations. And VA has its flaws, but one of them is not probably, you know, handling a crisis of this magnitude. And one thing that VA did report, or the secretary did say in the interview on our podcast, which is on legion.org, you can find it there, or you can download the podcast, is that something like 60% of beds are now filled with patients who have the Delta variant. So they're seeing a big uptick in veterans who need care for COVID. And, you know, we're all, you know, kind of like watching these numbers very, very carefully in the American Legion as we go forward. Because, as we know, the Delta variant is a big thing. And, you know, I'm from Idaho, and I see that Idaho is, like, leading the pack nationwide.
Yeah.
In COVID diagnoses and hospitalizations right now.
Yeah, Tennessee's up there as well. Let's get into the veterans and Afghanistan. You think about, I mean, the war just ended after 20 years, and we lost, 2,400 servicemen there? And a lot of the ones that are fortunate to come home, they've got to be scratching their heads on this whole thing. Did he address what happened there?
Yeah. And interestingly, is all three of our hosts are Afghanistan War veterans of our podcast, and they spoke about it. The secretary talked a lot about the sense of in late August, as everything was unfolding with the Taliban and in Afghanistan and the withdrawal, you know, it was this message of most of the people that they were hearing from were feeling disillusioned, disappointed, and isolated. Not what you want for mental health and well-being. Isolation is not something you want to confront when you're dealing with, you know, wartime combat service. And he says VA is preparing that they had been preparing for this moment, knowing that the withdrawal and the end of the war would be an issue. And, you know, he reiterated the terms, we hear you. And I think and by doing that, you know, he's trying to, you know, he said that they're trying to reach out more and get veterans to understand the resources that VA has, like the Vet Center program. Vet Centers are veteran-to-veteran, peer-to-peer therapy counseling programs. They're usually attached to a VA medical center, and they're very, very effective. And they're also, unfortunately, very little understood as a valuable resource. It's kind of a setting where people can go, sit around the table, they can visit, they can be among each other, and they can communicate. But there were some really astonishing metrics that he reported in the podcast, and that is use of the Veterans Crisis Line, which is a pretty big barometer on how veterans are doing or how they're feeling or what their mental health situation is. He said that the Veterans Crisis Line is every channel is way up. And he also made the point, and this is kind of interesting, is that while the number of calls went up, the number of texts and people who are participated in the chats, they were typing into their phone, not talking to somebody. Texts were up 30% this summer, and chats were up 70%. So everybody is, so the veterans are not necessarily making the 1-800 number phone call. They are, or the 1-888 phone call, or doing that. They're getting on their phones and they're communicating by text and chat, not in person. So more and more, which may be a function of the generation, or it just may be a function of how comfortable they are just talking to somebody about it.
Yeah.
But he also, the secretary, really pushed forward our you know, our buddy check program, which I've talked about on the show many times, and that's that we have lists of veterans in the community, our posts do, and they are, you know, last year, just in up through July of 2020, last time we have numbers on this, you know, 3,600 American Legion posts across the country were actively engaged in buddy check calling and checking on veterans to see how they were doing and what the American Legion or what their fellow veterans could do for them during difficult times. So there's a lot of, we have had multiple messages. We strongly stand by, we salute the veterans, those who served in the war in Afghanistan. We also supported an end to the quote unquote forever wars. You know, we can't continue to fight wars that continue on and on. And we're definitely concerned that the veterans of that war may feel disillusioned or disappointed or upset or anything like that. We stand ready to support them and listen and participate in the journey of that experience. A lot of our veterans are Vietnam veterans, and they understand this phenomenon pretty well.
Very well, I might add. Yeah. I'm looking at some numbers here, too. The conflict in Afghanistan wounded over 20,000, 20,700 U.S. service members. I mentioned how many lives. The exact number that I have in front of me is 2,461. The cost was $2 trillion, which comes out to $300 million a day for 20 years. And if you figure this out to 2050, a lot of these wounded vets are going to need the services of the VA. You add all that up, we're talking about $8 trillion. So going forward, there's got to be a lot of money for these guys that serve their country. No doubt about that. All right, I got to take a quick break. Jeff Stouffer joining us on our live line. We'll get into the October issue coming up next. Rich Fiesta will be joining us later in the show, bring us up to date on voting, especially in Texas, where they're suing the state. That and more back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on 5 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. Let's go back to our live line and rejoin Jeff Stouffer on behalf of the American Legion. For complete updates, legion.org. Let's talk about the October issue of the magazine. I like this story, From Service to Harvest. And it all deals with a program that started back in 1990 called AgriBility, which offers services in a number of states, about 20 of them. And the whole goal here is to get vets involved in farming, especially vets with disabilities and those suffering from PTSD. Talk to me about this one, Jeff.
Well, that's right. It's this program. It's for people with disabilities, but has an arm on veterans' disabilities, people who are service connected disabled specifically. And Henry Howard, our deputy director, went to Tennessee and to North Carolina to meet with these with a couple of these veteran farmers who are using AgriAbility, and they get support services from the program. But they're having, the best part about it is they're having success and a sense of purpose in the concept of starting and operating farms, and it is a support program, but to get them, you know, obviously adjusted, moving economically forward. But very important is that the in the two cases that Henry profiled in particular were one guy in North Carolina who had suffered a post-traumatic stress disorder and a traumatic brain injury and had a broken back from an IED explosion in Afghanistan. But, you know, he came back, and one of the effects of it was he had this terrible narcolepsy. He couldn't stay, and he would fall asleep suddenly. And if you're trying to farm and then you're falling asleep, lo and behold, he did crash his tractor and fell asleep at the wheel of the tractor. But AgriAbility was able to get him a device that would help him maintain consciousness while working. And he talks about the therapy that farming gives him, and as does another veteran who we profiled, Charlie Jordan, who was in Tennessee. He grows flowers. He's a flower grower and mushrooms, and he operates a beehive. You know, he was in the service for over 20 years, and he was he also came home with post-traumatic stress disorder. And I love this line. He says, "When I put my hands in the ground and I'm putting a flower on the ground, it changes me and automatically makes me calm. If I'm having a bad day, I go inside my greenhouse and let the sun shine on me, let the wind blow, listen to the bees buzz. Then I go out, put my hands in the ground, and I'm happy." Both of these veterans talked about what it meant to connect with the earth, to put their hands in the ground, to watch something grow, to have a sense of connection, and what it brought them in terms of, you know, mental health and well-being. And I thought it was a very, very compelling. We have a good video on the website that's going to be going up next week as well. So if you would might want to check that out as well. And then almost a companion piece in the October magazine is a story that we did in the spring, and we've gotten it in the magazine just in the October issue. It's called Wind Therapy. And this, you know, it's kind of plays to the concept that of how many, the variety of different therapeutic activities there are for PTSD, TBI veterans who are facing those issues. And this was on the Motorcycle Relief Project that has done more than 40 of these retreats, where they invite a fairly small number of veterans, 8 or 10 veterans who have, you know, diagnosed PTSD, TBI, to go to on a week long motorcycle adventure in Arizona or Colorado or someplace where there's good, and they teach them how to operate and how to have fun on dirt bikes, on motorcycles. And I know, and so, you know, you've got on one end of the spectrum, you've got these guys in North Carolina, Tennessee, who are finding calmness and solace by planting flowers and growing grapes and onions and things like that. And then on the other side of the spectrum, you've got these another set of veterans who find that high speed, outdoor recreational, we call it adventure therapy in our parlance, and that's where they find their relief. And this plays back to a thing that the American Legion's post-traumatic stress disorder, TBI, and suicide prevention committee has been professing constantly since the last 10, 15 years. And that's that no two veterans have the same kind of response. There is no magic bullet for recovery, for therapy. And it can be from planting flowers to riding on mountain dirt bikes, or it might be yoga therapy, or it might be transcendental meditation. It might be whatever it might be. But we can definitely say that we are very skeptical about the use of pharmaceutical treatments for you know, just the magic bullet, you know, prescription drug to treat PTSD or TBI. Because, again, that also plays when you get to using a cocktail of pharmaceuticals. The big thing that's been reported often and we're concerned about is tends to lead to more isolation, which,
sure,
as the VA secretary was saying at our convention, isolation is not what we want. And we need interaction, you know, in the case of the veteran farmers, interacting with the earth. In the case of the motorcycle guys, every evening they would ride all day, then they would go and they'd have a big dinner. They would all chip in to do the dishes and pack out the trash and all that. And then they would sit down and they would have, you know, veteran to veteran, you know, talk through it. Let's get through it. And so it is structured. It is effective. And it's effective for them. And that treatment or that therapy may not work for the next guy or gal, but it might work for you. You have to find the right therapeutical approach to handling this very complicated diagnosis and this condition.
I see in the article, too, there's a video that is available if you go to legion.org/magazine. And there's a video posted of the veterans bonding with their bikes. I got to check that out. That sounds pretty good. Yeah, whether it's, you know, crazy loud, you know, riding a dirt bike or being on a farm, sticking your fingers in the dirt, whatever works for you. But there's something I want to say here, and I'm really glad that you brought up the pharmaceutical industry here. And I'm not a vet, but I'm suffering a leg issue that goes back to last November. And I'm working the therapy because I'm sick and tired of doctors saying, well, try this drug, try that drug. I mean, I went through 3 or 4 drugs, and the last one, I just threw the whole damn bottle out the window because it's ridiculous. But, you know, that's what the medical profession does. I mean, here, try this, do this. And I always say practicing medicine. Well, they're practicing on me until they get it right, I guess. I don't know. But I'm sick and tired of this whole push to you know, use drugs to treat a problem. And, you know, for the vets listening right now, I think what you pointed out is so important. There's no one size fits all. I mean, if you want to do farming, if you need to talk to somebody, and there's plenty of people to talk to, especially with a link up of the American Legions all around the country, you know, seek out what works for you. I think that's the important takeaway of this interview, don't you think?
Right. I think the most important thing is don't let yourself be isolated. And especially, you know, the Afghanistan veterans who, you know, we salute and honor and really respect and appreciate the great service that they've given to our country. Frankly, you know, at the end of the day, they protected our nation from any future further terrorist attacks after 9/11. I mean, the 20-year experience, you know, maybe but the losses are hard to take. And I know that there's a lot of veterans who are doing a lot of, you know, soul searching about what the war meant and where it stands. But, you know, frankly, these men and women protected our nation for 20 years from any future, you know, serious major, you know, terrorist attacks in the United States. And so I think that's among many reasons we can certainly salute and honor them and remember that if they have, you know, feelings of isolation or need or well-being issue, that, like you say, there are resources everywhere. And certainly would like to, you know, have them, you know, reach out to vet centers at VA or communicate with the American Legion to find resources with veteran service officers. American Legion service officers stand ready to help veterans of every war era, you know, understand what is available to them and what they can do. Because there's no, but the worst thing that can happen is that kind of isolation.
Well said, my man. I'm going to leave it on that note. Jeff Stoffer on behalf of the American Legion and American Legion Magazine, legion.org for complete updates. Good conversation. As usual, my friend, you take care. We'll talk next month, all right?
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Flash. Bye.
Quick break. When we come back, Rich Fiesta will be joining us on behalf of the Alliance for Retired Americans.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with cancer after taking Zantac? If you have taken Zantac and have cancer, you may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And of course, you can check us out on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number two. Welcome one of our regulars. That would be Rich Fiesta, who is the executive director of the Alliance for Retired Americans. RetiredAmericans.org is their website. They're on Facebook as Retired Americans, and you could follow them on Twitter. Active Retirees is their Twitter handle. Here to talk about two things. Number one, the Texas Alliance suing the state over the voting restriction law that just passed there. Hey, Rich, welcome back to the show. What's the story on this?
Well, as you and we all know, Texas, which had an increase in many areas, increase in voting, increase of minority voting in 2020, with a lot of local election officials making accommodation for the turnout. Well, apparently that upset the governor and the legislature, so they have passed an unbelievably restrictive law that really is a voter suppression law that hurts seniors, minorities, people who work shift work, for example, and as they say, we're mad as hell, not going to take it anymore. And we and other groups are now in federal court trying to overturn this naked voter suppression.
Mm-hmm. How restrictive is it? Can you give me some examples?
Oh, sure. It eliminates drive-through voting, which some counties, because of the surge in 2020, went to 24-hour voting and voting polls, drive-through voting, for example. It basically eliminates drop boxes, which for older Americans, especially in a time of pandemic, is a very easy and safe way to make sure your vote is counted, first cast, then counted. It criminalizes, get this, efforts by public officials, election officials, to encourage voters to submit their absentee ballots, for example. It just goes on and on, Flash. It limits early voting hours, for example, and especially for seniors, many of whom work the polls as patriotic volunteers. It allows partisan poll watchers to use and get away with intimidation tactics by granting them increased freedom to roam around polling places, and then limits the oversight of election workers. It's just a terrible law, top to bottom, and that's why we at the Alliance for Retired Americans are in federal court.
And I see you have some partners in this lawsuit, Voto Latino. The American Federation of Teachers have joined in. Is this a federal court matter? Is that the case in this situation?
Yes, it's filed in federal district court in Texas. That's correct.
Okay. Well, hopefully this will send a message to the other states that are doing similar things. It started in Georgia. I know Florida's working. In the state of Ohio, I know they're working on one. I don't know how restrictive it's going to be, but it's happening in a number of states in America. And like you said in this release, why aren't we encouraging people to vote? Doesn't that make sense, Rich?
That's what, since we were young children in school, we're told is what democracy is all about, right, Flash?
Right. Okay, let's move on to lower drug prices. And this is a hot topic here. And for the life of me, I can't figure out why, when they set up Medicare Part D, they didn't allow them to negotiate. Now, are we going in the right direction on this one? Are they trying to change what they did back in, I think it was like 2003, 2004, when George W. was president?
That's right. We've been fighting this abomination since 2003, you know, 17, now 18 years, and we're right at the door for finally allowing Medicare to use its common sense ability on behalf of Medicare beneficiaries, over 50 million, to negotiate for better drug prices. It's part of President Biden's Build Back Better agenda, and we can use the savings from lower drug prices through negotiations to add hearing, dental, vision benefits to Medicare, which Medicare has never had. So we're in the congressional committees now, working between the House and the Senate. They're on their own separate paths. And hopefully in the next month or so, we can reach the finish line for negotiating for lower drug prices.
Rich, let me ask you, I was reading about this $3.5 trillion social spending bill that the Democrats want to pass. And with what you just said, saving a lot of money on Medicare Part D, is that going to help pay for that bill? What's your take on that?
Yes, the Congressional Budget Office says that if we allow Medicare to negotiate for lower drug prices and then apply those savings also to private plans, this can save taxpayers up to, in fact, over $700 billion over 10 years, a good chunk of that $3.5 billion. And then we can use the savings to expand Medicare for hearing, dental, vision, for example. So it's a win-win for everybody, for taxpayers, for Medicare beneficiaries, and Americans as a whole. So that's why we at the Alliance commissioned a poll this last summer. 90% of seniors, regardless of party, where you live, race, gender, support this common sense solution to bringing drug prices down.
And one more question here before we go. Where are we with Medicare funding? Because I'm looking at the last analysis that came out, and I think, isn't it like in 4 or 5 years, we're not going to be up to 100% funding? Is that right?
Yeah, well, that's funding for the hospital. That's the Part A part of Medicare, the hospital fund. That's what our 1.45% in taxes comes out to fund every year. The Affordable Care Act, 10 plus years ago, actually extended the lifetime, but we have some work to do. Some of the savings, like we've been talking about earlier today, can go help there as well. More efficiencies, cutting down on waste, fraud, and abuse. So that's something over the next few years we also have to keep an eye on and look for better ways to keep Medicare healthy into the future as well. And we can start with Medicare drug negotiation.
I hear you, buddy. All right. You can find more at retiredamericans.org. That's retiredamericans.org. You take care, my brother, and we'll talk to you in a month for another update, all right?
Thank you much, Flash. Talk to you soon.
And that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up on Monday, it's IBEW Local 103 out of New England and the Labor Council for Latin America. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.